The Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is sponsored by Shure Design T-shirts. Shure Design T-shirts make some of the softest T-shirts known to man. Whenever a child's dog or cat is run over by a car, the tears of the child are collected by their parents and sent in packages to Thailand, where Bennett transforms them into a fabric which makes all other t-shirt cotton seem like you're wearing the very crown of thorns that our Savior, Lord Jesus Christ, wore. These shirts are so soft that there are rumors on Capitol Hill that President Barack Obama actually visits the grave of Martin Luther King and JFK and wraps his corpse in a Shure Design t-shirt because it temporarily brings them back to life and allows them to give advice to Obama about ways to lead the country. Don't know if it's true or not. It's just what I dreamed. So go to SureDesignT-shirts.com. If you put my name in, you get 10% off these magnificent shirts. Also, if you want to support the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, why not go to DuncanTrussell.com and check out our shop? We've got posters. We've got shirts. Everything's in stock. They sold out. The last time everything was in stock, they sell out really fast. So why wait? Go to DuncanTrussell.com and buy one of our super psychedelic shirts made of this soft, sweet, Shure Design t-shirt fabric. You can also support us by going to Audible.com. Audible is the purveyor of some of the greatest audiobooks on earth. If you sign up for a trial membership, you will get a free audiobook. You can go to audibletrial.com/family hour, sign up for a trial membership. They will give you a free audiobook. They've got tons of Stephen King novels, tons of stuff by Ram Dass, Thich Nhat Hanh, Deepak Chopra. It's a fantastic way to get some hours of entertainment that you can listen to when you go on your summer vacation. And it'll help drown out your mewling grandmother as she moans for more insulin or whatever she's doing to cast a shadow on your much-deserved vacation time. You can also support us by going through our Amazon portal. Please tell me you're not one of those people who still takes their meat body down to local stores to buy stuff. Give me a break. Do you really want to be surrounded by these hepatitis infected HPV oozing freaks buying their giant jars of Costco jelly beans when you could be ordering your lubrication, nipple clamps, and eyeball dyes from the comfort of your own home? Go to DuncanTrussell.com, go through our portal, and we get a small percentage of what you buy. Also, much thanks to all of you who have donated. I would really like to thank our first $1,000 donation. I sent you an email. I didn't hear back from you, so I'm assuming you want to remain anonymous, President Assad. But if you do want to chat, please respond to my email. And to all of you who have been donating, you don't have to send $1,000. Send a buck. If you like this podcast, isn't it worth paying at least as much as you pay per birth control pill? Now please enjoy episode 69 of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. Hare Krishna, God bless you, and get into jogging. It really does make you feel better. It's a hell of a lot better than Percocet. Hello, friends and family, and thank you for tuning into the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. We are broadcasting from our new studio located at the Los Angeles branch of Monsanto, which is letting us record this podcast now from their incredibly beautiful office complex, which is located underground in downtown Los Angeles. You guys, I'm not allowed to film any of this place. I wish I could. I wish you could see it. It's one of the most innovative, high-tech office buildings that exists in the world today. They don't have regular hallways that you walk down. Their hallways are fluid-filled canals. You see, the executives at Monsanto are a species that is much older than human beings, and it is because of their mastery of genetics that we exist today. Yes, these beings, they're responsible for every great innovation that's happened throughout society. The way they describe it is that they have blown their life air into the sails of the destiny of humanity, and we are partially theirs. And it's not a slavery thing. They love us very much, and they want us to be happy. But some of these beings, they prefer to swim. It is the sexual fluid of the frightened that the shape-shifting Monsanto executives love to swim in when they've transformed into their lizard forms. It's lots of fun. A ferryman takes me to my studio, and I'm recording here now from what they call the Chamber of Dreams. It's an incredible, beautiful room with stained glass windows all along the walls that show the history of Monsanto and our species, and the way that in that dark primordial past, when we are nothing more than hooting hunter-gatherers lost in a dangerous world, our merciful fathers came and transformed our primitive genetics into something we can now be proud of. Monsanto genetics, the genetics of humanity. And our sweet friends could have stopped there, but they didn't. Now, they are altering the genetics of our boring old grains and vegetables. Yes, the fields of our future are going to be fields of freedom. And these freedom fields are filled with some of the most advanced, genetically modified fruits and vegetables that the world has ever seen. Designer vegetables, created by our friends at Monsanto. Now a word from our sponsors.
Hi all, welcome to Celebrity Corner. It's me, Natasha Leggero, from Chelsea Lately and Burning Love. When interviewers ask me what my favorite thing is about being a celebrity, I always tell them, it's not the glamour, cash, or thrills, though I do love those things. It's the food. You heard me right. My favorite thing about being a highly paid comedic actor in Hollywood is the delicious food they feed me in between takes of the many hit shows I've been a part of. And the reason why is Monsanto. Monsanto is a farmer-friendly company that genetically modifies the vegetables and grains that feed the most beautiful people in the world, Hollywood actors. On every Hollywood set during lunch, dinner, breakfast, or snack time, you can be sure that all the famous, beautiful actors are chomping on some of the delicious, genetically modified foods fabricated by the genius scientists at Monsanto. Hollywood actors like me just can't get enough of these delicious Monsanto products. We love the way it feels as our teeth grind and crush the food while our celebrity saliva mixes in with the pulp. We love swallowing the masticated food and feeling the way it moves down our esophagus and into our stomachs. We love the way our stomachs produce acids that dissolve the food and push it to our bloodstreams. We love merging with genetically modified food at the quantum level. It is our way. Bottom line, the world is changing and successful, beautiful people like me have surrendered to the flow. We have merged with the first fruits of the dawning age, a glorious age where the fundamental components of nutrition have been improved by the farmer-friendly scientists at Monsanto. So do the right thing and buy genetically modified food from your favorite local delicatessens and eateries. Be like Hollywood celebrities and eat Monsanto. It's the only choice.
That was Natasha Leggero. You could check her out at natashaleggero.com. Today's guest is making his third appearance on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. This son of a bitch is about to have his own show following Conan O'Brien. His name's Pete Holmes. So everybody, please blast this sweet man with your psychic tendrils. And after you listen to him here, why not go check him out on his own podcast, You Made It Weird, which is available on iTunes. Please, now, close your eyes, squeeze those eyelids tight, grit your teeth, and spray of psychic snot deep into this man's glory hole. Let him feel it, guys. Welcome Pete Holmes to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. All hail Monsanto, we bow down to our reptilian fathers. Okay.
Why wasn't I rolling? It was the best way to start.
You guys just missed the year's best gluten joke.
Check your gluten at the door.
Or, bitch.
We're eating gluten-free cookies because we learned that gluten is bad for you. I learned that.
Yeah, gluten is the...
Just now.
As far as food products go, it's the Satan of food. It's the Bin Laden of food products.
Really?
Yeah.
The Bin Laden of food products.
I don't know. I eat this shit all the time.
So
I don't know.
We trained it. Everyone. I don't know. I don't want to get started on that. I am not the authority. Talk to Joe Rogan about
that. We trained it.
We trained gluten.
You subversive son of a bitch.
You didn't feel that coming.
Can I ask you something? Do you like flying to your shows? Because if you do, stop the Bin Laden jokes.
What do you mean?
They'll fucking take your flight status away. It's the new form of banishment.
What do you mean?
Well, then, in the old days, if you upset the order, they would either execute you or imprison you. But now they just make it so you can't fly.
So you're saying, what about Joe Rogan? He talks about that. Sorry, everybody. I'm talking with my mouth open. Full. Open and full.
What about Joe Rogan?
He makes a lot of jokes like that, like 9/11 jokes and conspiracy jokes.
You know, I'm just probably
overreacting.
Way by like 5 trillion light years. But, you know, the creepy thing, by the way, I guess I did an intro. This is Pete Holmes.
Hi, everybody.
Back on the Doug and Trussell Family Hour.
It's great to be in the family.
The scary thing is just that they can do it if they want to.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. As much as I enjoy conspiracies and all that sort of stuff, I really kind of check out when people are like, they're building these camps and they're going to put all the Occupy Wall Street people in them. And I'm like, is that really?
The FEMA camps.
Is that what it is? I guess I should talk to you about it.
Well, yeah, it's that's a really wonderful conspiracy theory, man, and it's one of my faves. It's,
really?
Yeah, but basically the idea is there's like, man, I can't be specific. On a side note, I can't be specific about this, but I've been doing this show with Rogan. He's got this new show on Sci-Fi, which is called Joe Rogan Questions Everything, and it's just basically, you know, about conspiracies, and you get to be around a lot of the people who really believe some of this stuff. One thing I'm taking away from it is how absolutely intoxicating to some people these things are, and how easily you can get drawn in.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because that's what I've been thinking about mostly. And less interesting than me to conspiracies is the idea of the human brain and like how we want to believe some things, how certain types of... I'll just speak for myself.
Yes.
I'm a I want to believe things guy. And so this is what's happened. I went to my chiropractor, and I don't want to be too disparaging to my chiropractor, but he's a Scientologist, and I think... Got closer?
Yeah, sorry. I got to get better mics.
That's fine.
He's a Scientologist?
He's a Scientologist, which is fine. I'm assuming he's a Scientologist based on the literature in his waiting room and based on like some of his clientele. Now, I have no problem with that. There's no judgment or labeling there. But here's what I did learn about myself from this guy. I go in, and he does this type of chiropractic where like he shows you, like, lay on the table and bend your left knee, and now raise your right arm. And now see how your right arm is strong, and it'll push against it. And you push against it, and you see that you're strong. And he's like, now put your knee down. And I'm making this up, by the way. This isn't the actual example. He's like, now straighten your knee and see how it goes weak. And you do. You're like, oh, my God. And he's like, that's because when you're walking, this knee bends. This arm has to compensate, because that's how we balance when we're walking. So, okay, so what is that? We're at the beginning of kind of like a type of cult logic. And all cults, all of these people... Fascinating. Joseph Smith, L. Ron Hubbard. These guys, I have actual real respect for anybody that can get a huge congregation of people to believe. And one of the things you do is you start with something true. And I honestly think that's what my chiropractor does.
That's the key, yeah.
You start with something intoxicating. People are stupid, and I'm certainly stupid, but like a lot of people aren't that stupid. They need something to get them in the door. So this is kind of what I felt like was happening with my chiropractor. Now, I could be wrong. This is my one subjective thing. He started with things that I was like, that's definitely true. When my left knee is bent, my right arm is strong. That's true. Then the first time I went, I said to him, I was like, that was like a magic show and I was the rabbit. It was one of the best experiences of my life. I was blown away.
Yeah.
He fucking blew me away, healed me of stuff like that I was feeling that day, like back pain, neck pain, headaches, went away. Real crazy shit. And I was like, you are amazing.
I've had that happen with chiropractors where the day of they fix...
Amazing.
Chronic problem.
Chronic shit.
Yeah.
Fixed right there. Now it comes back. Like it was a temporary fix. That's why you have to keep going.
Yeah.
But I was like really completely won over. Now, so okay, he's got a new disciple, right?
Yeah.
So this is like a little mini world of faith. and this is my new leader, my chiropractor, my magician chiropractor.
Sure.
Then I go again, and now he's doing like crazier stuff, weirder stuff, making weirder claims, just like the beginning of a cult. And I'm not, the Scientology thing is kind of unrelated, maybe. You can read into it if you want.
He's like, pull, see, when I pull your ear down, your penis goes into my mouth.
I mean, sometimes I forget that you're such, like, you're the most interesting guy I know, and I forget that you're hilarious. I know that's weird, but I think you'd rather be the most interesting person. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, and Duncan's hilarious. But he is doing, he kind of, once I was through the gate, I was like, this guy can do no wrong, and I kind of believe him on everything. But here's what I noticed, and this is me. This is my kind of failure. Was he was like, okay, I'm just going to use the same example because the point isn't the, he's like, straighten your foot. And when you straighten your foot, see how your right arm goes weak.
Yes.
And then like, he's like, and now, and I realized I lost track of what he was saying. And then I realized that like, I realized I was participating. Meaning, when I knew I was supposed to be stronger, I was acting that way. When I knew I was supposed to be weaker, I was acting that
way. There you go.
And then what I started to notice was when I was supposed to be stronger, he wasn't pushing as hard. This may just be with me. I'm not trying to drag him under the bus. But what I'm saying is I was like, oh, there are times when you go, see how you're strong. And I'm like, I don't push. He doesn't pull. But he goes, see how I can't pull you away. I'm like, I didn't say that. A bigger man would be like, but you're not pulling.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that was just a little bit. But fuck that. Okay. What I mean is I don't want to throw him all away. I still go to him. I'm like, okay, some of the sleight of hand stuff isn't really winning me over anymore. But the chiropractic adjustment and all that sort of stuff.
But you wanted to please him.
I did want to please him. I wanted it to be magic.
You wanted him. It was more important to you.
Yes.
That you didn't get in a conflict situation with this guy.
Right.
And dispute what was happening. Than it was that's for the thing to be real.
That's the sort of guy I am. I also want the magic of it to be real. I'm the kind of guy that wants to go into an unassuming chiropractic's office, and I'm 34 years old, older than Jesus. I want to go in, and I want to be introduced to something new.
Now look at this.
And believe it.
Pete Holmes, already in a small, slight little way being warped into the paradigm of this guy that's not necessarily based on reality at all.
Right.
And also, you're not doing that guy any you're not giving that guy any help by not disputing his shit.
Right.
You're confirming ideas he has that might be completely wrong.
You know what's weird, though, is I'm like, okay, this level of bullshit doesn't work on me. The, like, pretend pulling doesn't work on me. But what terrifies me is there is a level of bullshit that would work on me. You just have to upgrade it.
Or add acid to the mix. Seriously, add some LSD and Charles Manson to the mix.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about cults. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. This experience reminds me. Okay, so then I'm fascinated with the movie The Master. I love Paul Thomas Anderson. I'm wearing my There Will Be Blood t-shirt today.
Yes.
I love that movie. And this is what happened when I watched The Master. You've seen The Master?
Oh, yes, I have.
I was like, oh, I'm 100% more likely to become a Scientologist because I found the stuff that they did it so interesting. The sitting across from each other, no blinking, answer these questions in a row. Like, let's get your subconscious talking instead of your ego. I'm going to insult you and you can't react. All that stuff just felt like improv games to me. Stuff that I already love, like little social experiments.
Right.
So the movie, even though it clearly portrays L. Ron Hubbard or the character in the film who's, L. Ron Hubbard as kind of like not a charlatan, but as a guy who's making it up as he goes along. It ended up me being like just a little bit more interested. I was like, what are people turning their backs on their families and society to join? Whether it's Jehovah's Witness, Christian Scientists, Scientologists, there's something. What is the carrot on the stick that they're going after? So then I started reading this book called Inside Scientology.
Love it. I've read it.
Isn't it great?
Great.
Fucking blowing my dick off. I'm reading it. And here, I wonder if you had the same experience. And I know I'm talking a lot, and I want to make this more of a dialogue.
No, please. No, go. I love it. I love cult stuff, man.
Me too. Here's my experience with that book, and then I want to hear yours. I was reading it, and I was like, at first, I was just like, L. Ron Hubbard is the shit. He's transcended truth. It doesn't matter what's true anymore. He's like, I'm an adventurer and an inventor, an explorer. People were like, he sounded like he had lived 10 lives. So his followers knew that he was lying, but he had transcended the burden of truth. It didn't matter anymore. It was like, did I really win a Purple Heart in war? No. And they know that. But, like, he's the leader. Like, that you just get to the point where you don't even have to qualify things
Well,
anymore.
Fuck, man. I mean, you want to talk about the cult. Here's the thing. This is where it's hilarious being in a society, in almost any society, in really turning your nose up at cults.
Yeah.
Because what are we doing? Like,
you and I?
No, yeah, America. Like,
I thought you meant you and I because there are parallels to us.
No, look at fucking. Okay, so here you have, like, you know, let's take it to what are some similarities with L. Ron Hubbard and Charles Manson? Well, a couple of similarities are that L. Ron Hubbard didn't necessarily break any laws, but a lot of his followers did. They went and they broke into senators' offices. And
is that true?
Oh, yeah. There was espionage that they did. That's an insult.
I know there's fraud.
There was
a lot of fraud.
They would hunt people, stalk people. They would intimidate people.
Right.
So, and look at what Manson's followers did. They just, that got amped up times a zillion. And they just went and started stabbing people to death.
Right.
So, you have these two situations. What do we have? A strong central leader and brainwashed
undeniably
followers.
Charismatic, larger than life motherfuckers.
Now cut to Obama. Fucking shooting baskets. Woof. Woof. He's shooting fucking baskets. You look at that guy and you're like, man, that guy looks fun. God, I'd like to play basketball.
Yeah.
I'd like to sit down with him just for 5 minutes and just smile in front of my sweet president.
Yeah.
Barack Obama. Meanwhile, Guantanamo Bay, you've got people being force-fed, throwing their diarrhea. They're so desperate that all they can do now is throw their diarrhea at the guards. They've been transformed into animals. None of them have been, many of them have not been put on trial. Many of them have no hope. So they're just trying to die. And we won't even let them die because we're shoving tubes into their fucking mouth. Now, let's imagine Charles Manson had kidnapped some people and was holding them in some area for years and years and years to the point where they're like, we're not going to eat anymore. He's like, no, you're going to eat, motherfucker. Yeah. I'm going to make you eat. I'm going to make you stay alive because I prefer for you to be alive and suffering than dead and at peace. That's what we're doing. That's what our cult is currently doing.
Yikes.
Simultaneously, you know, while Obama's shooting those fucking baskets, there are predator drone strikes happening where bombs are being dropped that are fucking killing kids.
Yeah.
Now, it gets really foggy when you realize that now we have a triad between Hubbard and Manson and Obama, and that all three of them are saying that these murders have some logic or reason behind them.
Interesting.
Now we're in madness land where it's like, wait, you're saying that's the only solution, Obama? That's what you've come up with? Like, this is it, really, truly? Truly the only way to fix these great, vast world problems is by incinerating innocent children with your high-tech fucking remote-controlled drones? You've got to be kidding me.
Right.
But still, in the same way that Hubbard and Manson have followers who are like, yeah, it's true, God damn it, it's the only way to do it. Would you rather it be some other way? Would you rather us die? You know what I mean? It's the same fucking thing.
Yeah.
So then you realize, oh, the occult is really just a mini society that bubbles up, a mini paradigm that bubbles up.
Well, it's interesting, the idea of the leader and wanting the leader to be right. We went into politics, which I can't speak to that. I don't know anything about anything, which is embarrassing. So you just talked about that, and it made me very scared and uncomfortable.
No, it's not scared. It's just that humans have a tendency to create what's called a consensus reality, which is a reality that everybody agrees on. So,
sure.
You know, the majority of people, even now I think it's even foggy when it comes to war. Like when you ask people about why are we in Afghanistan, nobody's, by this point, everyone's just like,
Right. Right. Yeah.
You know, and even if you ask soldiers over there, like,
Right. Well, what is the answer? Is it because we're consenting to be in?
Well, there's
Okay, well, let's take it out of politics because Guy won't be able to join you on that conversation just because of my ignorance. But when we're talking about Charles Manson or L. Ron Hubbard, or I was going to bring us into it, any symbol of like you have a podcast and you have fans. And I was thinking about like one of the things that L. Ron Hubbard did that was like a very mild form of brainwashing, which we also do as comedians, as any sort of commodity, is changing people's vocabulary, which I thought was fascinating. If you remember that in the book, like they don't call it literature, they call it technology.
Oh, yeah, they don't call it. Now, this isn't politics. I don't consider this politics. They don't call it when they drop bombs on kids, they don't say, hey, we got to drop some bombs on kids to kill the bad guy.
Right.
They call it a surgical strike.
Exactly. But this is everything. This is adultery, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or a miscarriage.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we put this language on, and that's a way of washing your own brain. We're washing our own minds all the time. So I think it's interesting that, like, I think about that. One of the reasons why maybe I like these guys is in their reinvention of themselves and in their magnetic quality, that I find that interesting. When you have, like, when Maron calls his fans what the fuckers or whatever, it's like, I call my fans weirdos. I'm like, oh, you're not a fan of the show. You're a weirdo. That's an interesting thing. Scientology, there's a parallel there. This isn't a book. This is technology. I don't go to therapy. I get audited.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not better than you. I'm clear. Or all these different, that's a way to get, and military time. I was thinking about that. You go into the military, the first thing you start doing, or one of the first things you start doing, is telling time differently.
Yes.
Your whole life, it's been 8 o'clock, and now it's 0800. You know what I mean? Like, that's a way into people's brains. But the fact that these regular schmo guys that aren't necessarily any better than you or I figure out this, like, bald spot, this vulnerability, this soft spot in the back of your head to lure people in and get them on board. And if you had someone like me who wants my chiropractor to have magical powers, now you got yourself a cult. Now you're in business.
Well, yeah, and you also don't forget the other quality that cult leaders have, which is that I don't believe that a cult leader sits down and maps out this idea of here's how I'm going to manipulate groups of people.
Right.
When you look at Charles Manson and you listen to some of his amazing speeches before he really went, like,
I don't know anything about him, really.
Oh, man.
You got to tell me.
He's got some, he really, like,
it, like, are you saying he had some carrot on stick, some good stuff?
Fuck yeah, he Truth? Did. Great stuff, man.
Really?
Yeah, great stuff.
Tell me what.
I mean, that's the tragedy. When you watch, there's a great documentary. It's on YouTube. It was shot in 1972. They just showed it at Cine Family. It's called, just if you YouTube, it's called Manson. I can't remember. It's really cool because it happened right after these murders happened, which are these horrific, brutal, awful fucking things.
Yeah.
So you see, this has got his followers, you know, giving these speeches. They're holding guns. They're, like, giving these, like, crazy speeches. And 80% of what they're saying is just absolute horse shit and totally disturbing. But 20% of what they're saying, what Manson was teaching them, is fantastic.
Right.
Which is, you know, overcome your fear. And so what one thing that he was doing is, you know, they're all just getting blasted on acid together. And one thing that he was doing is he was getting everyone to fuck. So he was getting everyone to fuck in every single way to try to eradicate all of their sexual hangups by, like, stripping away. Because one of the, you know, the cult that we're in, one of the first things that it does is it implants into your mind a kind of sexual guilt. So people have all kinds of hangups and guilt when it comes to sex. And it's sad because one of the surefire sources of bliss and pleasure has been shadow has been cast over it by fundamentalists or by, you know, authentic sexual perverts who have actually corrupted what is a really pure, beautiful, intimate experience. So he was trying to, like, get people to, like, have sex to try to get
well, see, right there, I think I said that on the show last time I did it. I'm one of those people. I'm happy to report that I've come a long way. I was actually just in therapy this morning, and we were talking about how far I've come since college in a good way. I don't mean just, like, in decadence and indulgence, but I mean that's part of it. But there's been a lot of deprogramming, and a lot of that had to do with sex. I think I remember saying either to you on the air or off the air, I was like, I would benefit, I don't think I need it anymore, but I would benefit from a camp where people are just, like, free loving each other. Because I have that hang up.
Everyone would.
Everyone would.
Yeah.
Everyone would.
Everyone would. And look at what popped out of your mouth right following sex. You said decadence and indulgence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, we live in such a
I was thinking about ice cream.
We live in such a filthy fucked up society that decadence and indulgence are bad.
Yeah.
So this is a negative term. When you think, ah, I'm being decadent, there's a guilt attached to it.
Yeah.
When you think I'm being indulgent,
right,
there's a guilt attached to it. Right. It's like you've turned the knob up too high. In our society, there's, like, five levels that you can turn the knob up to, and past that, you're probably breaking the law.
Yeah, yeah. So sex camp and Manson, we're all.
Manson was a sex camp, basically.
Right.
He just, the problem is that Manson you know, this is something they talk about in spirituality. When you have, for someone to become a guru, they have to die. Their personality has got to go away for good. They have right. to, they have to, like, you know, like how tornadoes happen?
Nope.
It's fascinating. You get, so you get, like, I can't remember which is which, but you get really cold air up top and really, or warm air underneath, cold air up top, and this creates this, this pushes the air in a way that creates right. this cyclone effect. And if conditions are perfect, then you will transform wind into a force of nature that can evaporate cities,
right? Right?
It's incredible. If the conditions are right, what can happen?
Right.
So in the same way, in a person, if the conditions are right, there can be a neurological happening that causes your personality to get evaporated in the same right. way those cities get evaporated, and you just transform into a infinity, and now you are an actual guru.
You're a tornado.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And people who get around you will be permanently altered.
Like Blanket Man.
Blanket Man, exactly. That guy, everyone, one thing everyone says is that guy, there wasn't a person there.
Right.
Everybody just says there wasn't a person there anymore.
Yeah.
It was something else. It was something else.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was talking to someone at the Ram Dass retreat, and they were talking about the saint that they'd met in India, and I can't remember her name now, but he encountered her, or Ram Dass had encountered her, and described it as coming in contact with a wild animal. It was like being around something that is a human body,
right?
But it's no longer in the human paradigm anymore. Mm-hmm. It's something else. Who mm-hmm. knows what it is? Something else. So those people have obliterated their personalities and their egos, and they're not in it for the fingering. They're not in it for getting their cocks in mouths, and they're not in it for who knows what they're in it for.
Right.
But, well, the problem with these other people is they temporarily create that vortex effect.
Other gurus.
Cult leaders.
Yeah.
What ends up happening is their ego gets carried into the game.
Well, that's so funny that you fucking say that, man. So I'm reading Inside Scientology, and you know I'm an open person. I love you, and you're an open person.
Well, me too.
But I also just like to think that I'm not a stupid person either, and neither are you, of course. But I'm reading the book, and all I'm thinking is, great, cool, sounds interesting. You know how all these acid-dropping hippies loved Dianetics, loved the early Scientology, loved all that stuff, but then it took this weird turn, and I'm happy that it did, because up until that point, I was concerned. I was like, oh, I'm going to do this.
Yeah,
you know what
sure.
I mean? But then I was like, oh, and what you just said, I felt like L. Ron Hubbard's ego got in the way when they said that it was a thought crime to say something disparaging about him or his writing.
Yes.
I was like, oh, we just, it's ruined.
That's it.
You just you shit in the punch bowl.
Over.
And it's over. I'm done. And forget about like the Scientology like creation story about Thetans and latching onto people and being in volcanoes and implants over billions of years. Suddenly it all just sounded like a guy swinging his dick around instead of a guy who at the beginning, when I was like really kind of on board with, at least I was like, is there a covert way I could get someone to audit me? Because this sounds like, I just want to be hypnotized. I want someone to like send me to a past life or something.
Yes.
That sounds interesting. Of course, that's up my alley. But then I was happy and kind of relieved when I was like, oh, good. I don't have to be a Scientologist. I'll just do other things.
Well, you what you become when you get really close to the obliteration of your ego.
Yes.
Is you become, there's different terms for it, but you become a magician. And you become someone who is still rearranging subjective blocks of reality for your own personal gain based on your tiny identification with the self. So this mm-hmm. is like when you have Hubbard and Manson, you'll always see this inevitable power dynamic where they're still caught up in the power game.
Right.
Whereas when people get a little closer to the void, then that power game goes away, and then they don't care anymore. They don't
right.
care. They just don't care.
Right.
They're gone because they... But
and that's where you get those esoteric answers about like, I'm not teaching you anything, I'm not even here, all that sort of stuff. Or you go like, buy some books and join me at the sea, join me on the sea where I'm going to teach you even more secrets or whatever.
Well, you know, man, I was just, the way I'm describing it sounds mysterious, but another way to put it is like, I was just on an airplane flying back to LA with this girl I've been seeing, and there's this little boy sitting in front of us.
I know that boy.
That would be so weird.
I know.
I have seen him too. He comes to all of us.
When you're on ayahuasca and you see the big black snake.
This little kid. The snake, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
This kid, he looked at, I remember he was sitting in the seat and he's looking at us. And then he looks at my girlfriend and he says to her, "You are beautiful." He was like from Dubai. Uh-huh. And he had this great little accent. And then he reached back from behind the seat and was like holding her hand as we're flying. And then he was just all he was this kid. He's just filled with love. He's just
right.
A sweet little kid.
Right.
So that.
Right.
That's
what I'm talking
about. That's it. That's the thing.
That's another thing I've been saying lately, which is that kids are right.
Yes.
And we learn all these words and things. Like, for example, I'm kind of working on this on stage right now. But when I was a kid, all I cared about, when I went to the library, I got books on hypnosis, magic, the universe, aliens. That was it. And you know what? I was right. Here's what we start doing. I was just thinking about this today. This is all today. Play area. Like you're a kid. Grown-ups are looking for permission. Okay? We even are guilty of that. I want permission and I want a reason to sit down and talk to you.
Yes.
So we record it. And that's our involvement in what I'm saying. But it starts as a kid. Kids want to play all the time. Because kids see the color and kids feel the air. And kids aren't thinking later. They're completely present. That's why tiredness, exhaustion just hits them all at once. Because they're not rationing their energy.
Yeah.
They're just like, I feel great now.
Right.
And I'm going to chase that bee.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then we start doing something, which I'm not saying we shouldn't do. But we invent recess. And we go, now it's recess. And that's a time for you to play. And that's when you're silly. And we start putting the future on kids. Billy, be good now. Recess is at 1 o'clock. That's when you can play with the blocks and stuff. And then that becomes playtime. And that builds in our brains, okay, to do certain things. To dance. This is me now. To dance, I need to be at a wedding and I need to be drinking.
Yeah.
What the fuck? I went to my show last night. I had a show at Largo last night and they were blasting just the best music. And I went in and just started fucking dancing. I was with a friend of mine and just danced. And I can't do the worm, but I tried to do the worm.
Yeah.
Because what the fuck? What's wrong with us? Why aren't we all trying to do the worm? What are you waiting for? You're waiting for a wedding. You're waiting for recess.
Right.
You're waiting for someone to say it's playtime.
Yeah.
The blocks come out now. But really, kids are right. Hold somebody's hand. Tell somebody they're beautiful. Go on an airplane and realize what's happening. Children are correct.
Yeah.
We spend all this time building up this ego and this identity and the idea of time and space and responsibility and identity. Mm. When really, I think now as a 34-year-old, I'm trying to get back, as silly and cliche as that sounds, inner child shit. I'm just trying to get back to the truth. I was driving here and I'm on the 405 or whatever. And you know, there's that big hill. And you could put it in neutral and you'd still be going 65, you know what I mean? And I just opened my arms, you know what I mean? Because that's what a kid would do.
Yeah.
It's an amazing feeling when we can put ourselves in the present and be like, I'm not thinking about, I know I'm ranting, but I'm so burdened about how much sleep am I going to get tonight?
Yeah.
What do I have to do tomorrow? I'm always kind of aware of it. When really, if we could just be a kid and be like, I have energy to talk to you, Duncan, now. I'm going to have fun with you now and not worry about what I have to do after this.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You're talking about one thing with kids is you can see them go into this beautiful trance state, too, when they're, playing, you know. You can, you start talking about when you start pretending to be whatever the thing is, they immediately will go along with it and get so deeply into it because that's where they stay.
Yes.
And also to add to what you're saying... One thing I've noticed that I do is if I'm being particularly healthy, I've gotten addicted to jogging lately. So I'll wake up and I'll go running. And
I thought you were gonna say opium for sure. Nah. I was like, here we go.
I'm kind of down on opiates right now, but I've been jogging. And so I'll be jogging and it's beautiful in the morning and the birds are singing and I'll be jogging. But in my mind, I'll be thinking, I haven't really started my day yet, you know. This is just me jogging before I get to work, working on the podcast.
Right.
So then I'll come home, and then I've been trying after I jog, because that's when all the endorphins are pumping and your high is like height on your own biochemistry.
Right.
Then I'll sit down, and that's when I'll try to chant. So I'll start chanting.
Buddy, meditating after exercising is like fucking something on something. Make your own analogy. It's the greatest.
It's like pancakes on a pig.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I'll start chanting. But even then in my mind, as I'm chanting, as you go in and out of that state, my mind will be saying, okay, man, but, you know, we got to get to work now, because you've spent 2 hours jogging and meditating. We really got to get down to business.
Right.
And then suddenly, like, the next thing you know, you're like, well, I got to go eat. Now you're eating, and your mind is like, up. We got to eat quick and get down to business, brother.
Breaking my heart.
And then finally, like, you sit down in this stupid fucking business thing that you're supposed to be doing. Now you're alive. Your mind's giving you permission, because you're acting
right
in a way that
recess is over.
Yeah. Now you're an adult.
You're doing the day. When people are like, someone will say something like, you know, it was so beautiful today, and I just laid on my couch, and the breeze was coming through the curtains, and I sat there looking at the sun and listening to the birds, and I just wasted the day. You're like, what the fuck did you just say?
Yeah.
Like, you talk about, and we just don't, again, we're just looking for permission. We had to be on vacation to do that. Fuck that. Tuesday in LA. Do that shit. Cancel some stuff and turn off your phone.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, the crazy side of all this, especially in our business, Pete, we're starting the cult. In our business, one thing that I've found across the board, and minus a few people, is this amazing misery. You talk to people and they have had success that for some people is, if some people would think, if I had that level of success, that much money coming in, that much.
That would be it. I'd be set.
I would have no more trouble. But you run into these people and they are beyond miserable.
Yeah.
They have this, they're afflicted. And so they get downtime. Because they've accomplished whatever the thing is they wanted to accomplish. They have downtime where they have days and days and days where they don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Days and days and days. Plenty of money in the bank. And yet they spend those days in a kind of pensive anxiety state.
Worried about what? You're not even sure. Are you watching Rectify?
No.
It's a great, it's good. Everybody really loves it. I'm only two episodes in, so it's too early to say. But it's about a guy who was in prison his entire adult life, and then he's released. That's all you really need to know. And he talks about getting out, and he was meditating and stuff on the inside. No spoilers here. That's in the pilot. Yeah. It's a very big. He was like clearly this guy who's trying to make the most of his time inside, reading and meditating and trying to get out of death row, basically, in his mind. And then he got out, and he was like, ever since I've been out, I've been feeling this anxiety of something coming, and I don't even know what it is. I don't have any responsibilities, but I've noticed that everybody is constantly worrying about a thing that's coming down the road. Whereas when I was in prison, and I'm paraphrasing, you should just watch the show, he was like, it was all about the time in between the seconds. It was just the moment. This guy was in, it's another cliche, but like the only time he was free was in prison. You know, he was there because he was
so cool.
Powerfully in the moment.
Yeah.
It was like Eckhart Tolle says, it's like, what time is it? It's now. If you ask a bird, what time is it? It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Why are you calculating the tilt of the earth and what point in the rotation we are?
Sure.
That doesn't exist. It's all an illusion. It's all fake. It's right now.
But here's where the rub is. It's like, indeed.
Yes.
That's true. But that fucking bird ain't paying rent on its goddamn nest.
Hey, believe me, we're two jerk-offs in a room on a weekday that don't have anywhere to be for a couple hours.
Right.
I get it. It's a luxurious and privileged position. And right now, people are at work listening to this. And I understand that.
Right. Well, no, man. I mean, this is even like this is something where I can't remember the name of the book. I think it's called The Harvard Psychedelic Club.
I'm reading it.
Okay, so you know, have you gotten to the part where
just have it. I just caught myself kind of lying. I have it.
It's a great book.
Yeah.
So, Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, which is Ram Dass's name at the time, and a lot of intellectuals were in this house, which I can never remember the name of, all dropping acid, tripping out. And at one point, somebody came back to the house because they'd been away for a while, and there's dishes in the sink. There's flies crawling on everything. Everything's mm-hmm. filthy. Nobody's been cleaning. And it's and this is kind of a symbol of like, okay, you're right. We need to let go and be in the moment, and we need to be like children and natural. But the big hippie question is, who's going to do the dishes?
Yeah.
Who's going to, who's takes the right, garbage?
Right, right. Where's the sassy woman that goes, you need to be present and pay these bills right now.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Because they're going to turn off the power.
So that's the, so now here's where it gets interesting. You can reverse that. You can reverse the loop. You can reverse the sense of where you're living. In other words, like, so now you can think, okay, well, work, I'm no longer living. Work, I'm just trying to get through it so that I can go back to the forest and go back to a meditative state. That really is life. Yet again, what have you done? You've taken this wholeness of time and you've cut up
right.
the pie.
Right,
again.
Right,
you've
right,
just
right,
done
right.
it in another. In other words, what you're doing is you're creating a hierarchy of time where
right.
this moment is more important
and
than
you're
that
separating
moment.
God from other places. This
yes.
this cat, I'm going to call him a cat, Rob Bell. It wrote this wonderful book that I think you'd enjoy. It's called What We Talk About When We Talk About God. And he's like, God is with us, for us, and ahead of us. Those are his big three things. And the with us thing was very fascinating. It was like, God isn't there when you invoke him or like stand around going like, God showed up and saved the man. God's like his big thing. He's like, God is here. I guess that would be called a little bit of pantheism, but he's just saying like, this is God. We're like kind
yeah.
of inside of God.
Yeah.
So to quote your boy Ram Dass, one of my favorite things in Be Here Now, which I know we kind of tease at the same time, you are the task. If you're sweeping, that's what's happening.
Yes.
And if you're filing a W whatever thing for your boss Troy, somebody's brain just melted. Some guy, my boss Troy.
What the fuck?
Yeah. That's also what you're doing. God can be present in all
yes.
of the things. If we slow down, he's there at the DMV.
You know why God's present in all the things?
Yeah.
Because we're God. That's the thing. Wherever you're at.
Well, when you wake up to your own divinity, that sort of thing.
Even when you don't. And that's the...
Even when you don't.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's like if you're in the same way that you see the child start playing make-believe and is like deeply engaged in the game, it's not like suddenly that's a fireman because he's playing one.
Right.
It's like he's still the child who's become a fireman temporarily. In the same way, this is the classic mystical idea. Even though we become so deeply engrossed in our own personal games and is, we're not God in the sense that we're not omniscient, we haven't transformed into blanket man, as you call
right,
it.
Yeah.
We still are the thing. We're just in more in the trance state.
Right.
And that the, it seems like
we're hypnotized.
We're hypnotized.
Asleep.
We're asleep.
It comes up every time, but we're Jason Bourne. We have amnesia and we
yes.
need to realize we already know Kung Fu.
Yes, that's the, that's exactly it. And
yeah.
that is fucking...
I can't make that point enough. I love that point.
I love it. It's an awesome, beautiful point.
Why is that? Why are those movies so resonating? Why it's more than just a guy kicking ass. You're kind of like, he's trying to figure out who he is. I'm going to stop.
They resonate with us because that is the predicament that we're in. Or when
right.
you watch the show where the guy's writing all over his body. And,
right.
You know, it's like, what's the name of that movie?
Memento.
Memento, yeah.
Yes.
It's like there's...
Our ego is insisting that we're a thing, and we're going, I've been told I'm Jason Bourne. That's what this passport says. What is that? That's how you feel when you wake up in the morning. I travel so much, and Duncan, do you eat at a lot of restaurants? I know you do. That's
yes.
a Glengarry Glen Ross reference. I know you travel a lot. So sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night, and just briefly, I don't know if I'm in a hotel or if I'm in my
sure.
house. And in that moment, I need to look around the room or, to continue with the analogy, I need to look at the passport and go, oh, I'm Jason Bourne. Like, I need to remember my name. I need
yeah.
to remember where I am and go, oh, this isn't hotel. I need to go in the card catalog of my brain and take out the hotel card, put in the one that says home. It's still just a space. It's still just
yeah.
a thing. It's still nothing, but I'm putting these labels on and I go, I'm Pete Holmes. That's what's so great about mushrooms is when you're on mushrooms, which I haven't done in years, but like when you're on them, I'm no longer Pete Holmes. That's the truth. I'm not. But Eckhart Tolle, again, is insisting the ego wants to stay in control. There's a power struggle and it's going, no, you're Pete Holmes. And therefore, I'm going to make you worry about the future so that you'll continue to impose your ego and insist on remaining Pete Holmes. And I'm going to keep playing clips from your past, a little clip show. Anxiety, stress, memories, regrets. So I can be like, remember when Pete Holmes did that? When Pete Holmes peed his pants or whatever it is? See, you're that guy and you will be that guy. But when we slow down and are just in the moment, we're nobody. And that's a big threat to everything.
Yeah, well, yeah, it is. Well, it's a real you're talking about a complete transformation of the paradigm, and it's a
right.
I think a lot of people don't want to do that. It's like, I don't listen, asshole. I'm enjoying playing the game.
Right.
I don't feel like not playing right now. And if
well, that's what Hicks says about the roller. Sorry to interrupt.
No.
But the roller coaster, he's like, it's just a ride. The famous Bill Hicks thing. It's like, yeah, it's just a ride. It's a loud and persistent illusion.
Yeah.
But then the people who have a lot of money and have a lot of power and are fucking a lot of broads or fucking a lot of dudes, if you know, whichever, I don't give a shit. I'm just saying, those people go, shut up. I'm paraphrasing Hicks here, but I'm just saying, shut up, stop saying this is a game or an illusion or a simulation, because I'm rather enjoying it.
Sure.
And I'm in a hot tub right now, and then they get those people out of the way, whether it's Christ or Buddha or whatever. It's just like, can you beat it, please?
Yeah. What? Fuck you. You're not going to screw up my casino. You're not screwing my casino into exactly. a church
asshole. This is my house. You know, this is something I've also been working out on stage, which is the idea that, like, we forget that we're on a planet. This is right up your alley. We're on a planet, and we all forget it. And that's the beginning, going back to the cult thinking, that we all brainwash ourselves. I'm not on a planet. I'm at Duncan's house. In fact, that's not even level one. Level one is I'm in a chair. Level two is I'm in this room. I'm in your studio room.
Yeah.
Level three is I'm in your house. Level four is I'm on your street. Five, I'm in Los Angeles. Six, I'm in California. Seven, I'm in the United States. Eight, now we get a little bit wider. I'm on a fucking rock. You know what I mean?
You know what Timothy Leary calls it? A gravity well. He calls it we're trapped in a gravity well.
That's part of the bit. I say we're people say they're afraid of flying. We're all flying.
Yeah.
We're constantly flying. And why aren't we afraid? Because someone said gravity, and I said, got it.
Take the bit a step further and realize that not only are we like stuck on a planet, but we're literally being held down by a bend in the fabric of space and time.
Right.
It's a result
keeping
of
us stuck
the
to the
mass
rock.
Of the fucking rock. The rock's not what's sticking us. Its mass is creating a compression in time and space.
A gravity well.
Yeah, a gravity well. We're fucking stuck in a goddamn gravity well.
Crazy.
That's no fun. We're like flies on a fucking flytrap.
Right. It's all ego. It's not only am I Pete Holmes, but I'm Pete Holmes in this room, in this city, in this town, on this day, at this time. All that stuff really, and I'm actually getting to the age where I realize there are things I don't want to think about. It's not cute anymore. And I can freak myself out talking about what we're talking about right now to the point where it challenges me. It makes me too uncomfortable that we're just floating in space. It's insane.
Well, that's the, you know, what it is. All that stuff is the mind. And it's, we both live in that place. I was just, you know, I had this fucking profound moment when I was out in this meditation retreat. Did I tell you about this meditation retreat?
No.
I've been yapping about it here. I went to this meditation retreat, got to meet Ram Dass. Yeah, it was fucking incredible. But I'm riding in a car to go to his house with this guy Raghu Marcus, who was also a devotee of Neem Karoli Baba. And he said this thing. These people, man.
It sounded like you just ordered an appetizer. I don't know what that meant.
I like three.
It sounded spicy.
Can
I don't know.
Karoli Baba and a Raghu Marcus.
It's definitely deep fried.
They these people, they all throw out they in a very real yet casual way.
Yes.
They just throw hammers at your fucking where you're stuck.
Yeah.
But they do it in such a subtle and graceful way that somehow it like has more impact than somebody being like, "Hey, wake up to this." It's like the way they do it is like, because they've all been in the same place, but you know, we're riding to go see Ram Dass, and like I'm rambling about Neem Karoli Baba. You know, is he a what do you think, Raghu Marcus? Do you think he's like a super evolved human, and that all human beings are going to be like this guy? And I'm going on, calculating, and he smiled at me. He's looking at me. He's like, I don't think about those things. He's like, I just try to work on myself so that I can be of service to the person next to me. And he did. When I say it, it sounds fucking stuck. He said it in the most sweet way. It's like,
yeah. No, it doesn't sound bad.
They've condensed this thing. Like our minds,
He's loving his neighbor. Literally, he's talking about his neighbor.
And what we do is we shoot out our tendrils and we try to
cover as much ground as possible.
Suck the nectar of wonder
from
the wildest ideas that we can create. You know, from that we get high. We'll get these moments of like, holy shit, I'm on a fucking rock.
Yeah.
Gravity well.
You're right. It's like a drug. I'm trying to get high.
And it's beautiful. It's fine. And it's fun. It's fun. But what they've done, or what the idea is, you begin to like start pulling those things back in, and you realize that what's actually happening is I'm projecting onto the symbols of life my own love. Mm. And this is kind of like there's a song, it's called Sankhya philosophy, I believe. It's in a huge part of the Bhagavad Gita, a huge part of yogic systems. There's a book called the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali that talks about like the model that they have, and you'll love this. The model that they have is you have, here's the model. The model is that you have an essence, an essential self. And this essential self is compared to a light, a sun. It's this thing which radiates beauty and love out into the world. And that's all it is this love radiator that projects love out into the world. So that's what you actually are. Then you have the mind. And the way that the mind works is it takes the phenomena of the external world and it instantaneously duplicates it. So when you're looking at me right now, you're not really seeing me. You're seeing a neurological impression of me created by your mind. You're not seeing me. It's like I'm activating your optic nerve and your senses so that you've created a replicant of this thing that's in front of you.
Yeah.
So that replicant can be compared to a slide that's being placed on top of a projector, and the eternal light that you are is shining through the replicant that you've created. So really, when you see anything, all you're actually seeing is a reflection of your own self being shined through the...
Like a dream, almost.
It's like a dream.
You're everyone in a dream.
You literally are everyone, and you're only seeing the beauty of yourself. So
are you saying this is one of those mind melting things where it's pretty simple, basic stuff? I don't know why I was just afraid that my thought was too trivial or something. But like, how do I know blue looks like blue to you, sort of thing?
Exactly.
But how do I know Duncan looks like you to you?
Yeah, because all that's happening is our minds are catching reality, replicating reality.
But it's a valid point.
Well, you don't know.
What I know is blue could be completely different.
We don't have the technology to tell that yet. But
So the
idea behind all this is that when you get in the presence of unconditional love, which is when generally most people experience that through a girlfriend or boyfriend or through pets,
I was just gonna say sex or
parents. Yeah, when you get in the presence of that, what you're really seeing is not the love that's coming from another person. The person doesn't control the love. Really, what you're seeing is a reflection of what you are. So when you say I'm in love, what you're saying is I've become myself around you, because that really is all you are.
Isn't that funny? Often in breakups, I'm going to say every breakup I've had, you go like, I can't be myself around them.
Yes.
You start acting this different way.
Yes.
And that's when you know, you're like, you need to get out. And that's often what I ask my friends who are in relationships. I say, do you feel more like yourself with them than away from them?
Yeah, exactly. And
wild.
And that's the melting that happens when you really are in love and you just melt. You dissolve. There's a Rumi poem. It's so great.
But it sounds so weird. Like, you know, when you were talking about the guys, like, I just work on myself and then I try and help my neighbor. Look, I get that completely. And to be honest, to a certain extent, I'm not saying that I could do a lot more to help my neighbors. But like, I worry sometimes about the narcissistic appeal. People that listen to my show know that I am aware of my own tendency towards self-obsession. I don't think you could file me wholly under self-obsessed. But I think we all... I can't speak for other people. I'm going to say for me, it's natural. I feed myself. I bathe myself. I clothe myself.
Yes.
I shelter myself.
Yes.
And then it's just a natural extension for me to be like,
sure.
And I entertain my own spiritual progress.
Yes.
Meditation is quiet time with yourself. And it appeals to the creative, artistic comedian guy who loves delving into himself, loves taking his own temperature, loves gazing at his own navel, see what I'm feeling, write about it, and
right.
then tell other, and then impose it on other people.
Yeah.
So when I heard him say that in your story, I'm like, I wonder if we have to be okay with that, if we have to be like, I like even what you were saying about your reflection of me and everything. Sometimes spirituality does have that sort of like, let's go ahead and acknowledge that you are you and you're the hero in your movie. And that's okay or something.
Yeah, man.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same thing as time. It's like, instead of like thinking, okay, now I'm on vacation, things are good. And now I'm working and things are bad. Or now I'm working and things are good. And now, instead of in the same way, when you find yourself being a cunt, which is an inevitability, and you find your ego acting up and you've thrown up your defensive tail feathers and you find yourself doing whatever the embarrassing, like, hissing
bad
thing
version
is,
of you is.
Then again, because now you've started working on becoming your true self, which is this radiant,
getting in touch with
eternal
that
eternal love field.
And yeah.
You're becoming
childlike, going back to our thing.
Absolutely childlike. Because children haven't...
They haven't built up recess. They don't know what recess is yet.
When you see a kid, you're seeing the core of the gobstopper. It hasn't been covered up by the different layers of fear. And so, in the same way, once you start, all right, I'm going to become that thing. Since you're becoming that thing now, when the shitty thing emerges and you yell at the fucking guard at LACMA, which I just did, and you find yourself in a stupid argument with a vat, with like just someone you run into on the street or whatever, stupid.
Yeah.
Now you love that. Now you're like, okay, this is happening, but I'm gonna as much as I can give unconditional positive regard to this part of myself as I am to all the other parts of myself, because otherwise I'm going to become phony.
Right.
And now I'm just going to try to build up this.
Well, that's so funny.
Thing.
When one of the questions, Rob Bell, the guy who wrote that book, was on my podcast, and I was talking to him a little bit about how can you not be a phony? The most repelling thing to me is a phony.
Yes.
That's why I had a hard time with my youth pastors and stuff, whose job it became to be nice and like everything.
Yes.
So I could make a painting of you. Let's say you're my youth pastor, Duncan. And I make a painting of you, and it is just garbage. It looks like I put the paintbrush up my ass and couldn't even see the canvas and just kind of swayed around a little bit. I go, this is you. And for some reason, the ambassador of truth that is a pastor, he's supposed to be the flagship.
Sure.
I'll lead everybody on the way to truth, love, light, happiness, grace, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, all that sort of stuff. Also became the guy who just likes everything. Like, that's great, buddy. I love it. Cool.
You liar.
Yeah. You fucking tell me it sucks.
You dirty lying piece of shit.
Ask me if I put the brush up my ass and I'll respect you. That's why the L. Ron Hubbard thought crime. I can't be wrestling with truth or looking for God in any sort of arena that doesn't allow complete honesty, even you yelling at a guard, even inappropriate, grotesque humanity where you, quote unquote, fail, because that's what you did in that moment. You were mean. I do it every day. I say something that is regrettable or inappropriate or embarrassing.
Yeah.
Or really what I'm saying is like, it's too telling to my true secret horrible self. Somewhere deep down, a child got the microphone and he went, cooties and 69 and boogers over the supermarket PA. And I'm like, fuck, I've been trying to keep that guy in the cold storage.
Yeah, man, you can't. And don't. And you're, because when you do, you're creating this awful fucking, this is why, like, you know, this is like the old version of celebrity was it was possible to have scandals not that long ago where if you got caught doing this thing or that thing, people would be like, oh my God.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He's a communist or whatever.
Right.
And still there's some people who try to maintain that bullshit public persona where you're like, shut the fuck up.
Well, it's like Bill Maher. It is past a scan. Like, he's not married and he clearly gets hookers and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, where it's legal and he goes to Vegas.
Or like, you know, Jay Leno's fucking fisting sheep or who knows.
Kind of doesn't matter. Is that what you're saying? Like, we've gotten
saying
a little
don't
bit past
try
that.
To trick me into thinking that you're whoever the fuck you are.
Right.
Don't try to trick me into thinking you're not a goddamn monkey descendant.
Right.
Because we're all dealing with
an
that.
MD.
Then because when you run into people like, you know, Doug Stanhope, for example, one of my favorite comics. When you run into people like that who have just managed to be fully themselves.
Right.
And the self that they're being is not pretty a lot of the time.
Right.
In fact, a lot of the time, and I mean, it's like a lot of the time their self-destructive attitude, it's not even romantic.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's bad.
Well, that's where we get the exposed nerve of realness. Yeah. And you're talking to a guy who does a pretty good job, I'd like to say, putting himself together. I'm not Stanhope. I'm not just letting my farts out in the car.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or like publicly, you know, just like being fully, completely open about this path that you've chosen and acknowledging that it's a self-destructive path, yet that's who he is, man. Right. He's completely reflecting himself. And that what that does for everybody is it has such more of a healing effect than someone who is pretending to be all put together and perfect and great.
Right.
Because when you see Stanhope or Louis C.K., then you're like, there's this sense of you've been forgiven. You're like, oh.
Right.
These guys, by being open and honest about the shit that they're going through.
You're blowing my dick off, as you always do. That's what I was talking about in therapy, is the idea of like, okay, so youth pastor, I love the painting. It looks great, buddy. You're my best friend. Jesus loves you. Let's moonwalk across the ice. Fake guy, fake Pete. That program still runs. It's easy to run. It's like Spotlight on a Mac. It's just Apple Spacebar. It's right there. But I'm learning that it's more engaging, more intoxicating, more real, and more magnetic to just be real. It's taken me 34 years and a lot of therapy. This is one of those $10,000 moments. I'm trying guessing how much I've spent on therapy. Probably a lot more than that. But like, I remember I was with a girl and I was in a situation where I thought it was a date. And it wasn't a date. Like the first thing that came up was that she had a boyfriend. And like, so I feel this shame. I'm a little embarrassed. Something was not what I thought it was. And I'm like, what is going on here? Like, why are you at dinner with me if you have a boyfriend? Is he okay with that? Yes. And so instead of being youth pastor and going like, that's great, I want to meet him. What's his name? Gene. Cool. That's the pop-up. It goes, would you like to run youthpastor.exe? And I'm supposed to click okay. But instead I was just like, he's okay with you being here? He shouldn't be. I'm a grown man with bad intentions.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Yeah. And I'm angry, and this is upsetting to me. We can still have a nice meal, but that's ridiculous. And and I'm not talking about sexually appealing or romantically appealing. It made me humanely appealing.
Yeah.
Those are the people, flies to light or whatever, moths to light. Flies love sugar. That people are drawn to. That's some Jesus shit. That's some, like, I know what this guy thinks about me. We don't have, like, biblical accounts of Jesus keeping it that real, but I'm sure he did.
Fuck yeah, you do. Who did Jesus hang out with? And people always say this really puffed up thing. They're like, well, Jesus hung out with prostitutes and drunks because he wanted to heal them. No. Jesus hung out with prostitutes and drunks because they're honest.
He went to the source.
He went to where people were being real.
Right.
That's where he wanted to be.
Well, you can't hang out with a politician.
No, or fucking like rabbis all dressed up in weird,
which
God
is basically
clown
a
outfits.
Politician at that
yeah,
time.
Yeah, that's not who you want to be with. You want to be with people.
Somebody who's been broken down.
Yeah.
Right.
Someone whose ego, who've like cast aside their ego and is just being fully in the moment of whatever they do.
Because here's the thing. Either you're so powerful you have nothing to lose, or you're so weak that you actually have the power of nothing to lose. So you can actually be yourself. Let's say I'm a prostitute and that makes you think of me in a certain way. That means at a meal, I can be honest and tell you that I don't like the painting. Because what are you going to do? Make me a prostitute?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm not putting down prostitutes. You know, I don't have hate or judgment or anything. I'm just saying, in society's eyes, you can't take me down. I have nothing to lose. Or if you're so powerful.
Well, I have nothing to lose according to the stupid fucking paradigm that you're prancing around.
I don't have anything that I value that you can take away from me.
It's like, look at you. You know, all these people who fucking look down their nose at this thing or that thing. It's like, motherfucker, you're selling your life hours just like I'm selling my life hours.
Right.
You know, I think that there's a... you know, again, though, that doesn't mean that you should like spiral down to try to again, if you hear this or you.
In fact, I would say you shouldn't spiral down. You should just wake up, Jason Bourne, to the reality that I don't have anything that you can take away. You know what I'm saying? The love I need is in me.
Yeah.
You can't take it.
Right.
It's not there for you to take.
Yeah.
It's like you're saying, it's that core of light. Be it. You can't even get it. I don't even know where it is.
And to be it, you've got to. Here's the thing. This is another important thing that I've realized from like going to this retreat, because the thing that I would like to entertain is this idea of like, okay, well, I'm just gonna be the light. No, it doesn't work like that. They say it does. There's stories of enlightenment where a drop of water hits a puddle and someone wakes up to the unity of all things. But the reality is, it's very similar to exercise. Like, you don't just get to be the light. The yogic system is designed to, with like pretty rigorous exercises that like surgically remove chunks of your ego until you become the light. But it happens from a spiritual practice. It doesn't happen from
it's called a practice.
It's a practice.
Yeah.
You got to do it every day as much as you can, or at least set the intention to do it every day. So you create the cognitive dissonance inside of you when it's not happening, where you're like, shit, why am I not meditating?
Or why are you thinking about the planet when really you should just be thinking about your neighbor? It goes back to that guy being like, I don't think about that stuff.
Yeah.
It's just that moment. What are you doing in that moment?
But Pete Holmes, we need you to think that.
I know. Can I tell you something that made me think of? Were you done?
With that particular thought? I want to ask you a question before we keep getting philosophical. I've got to ask you about something, but go ahead.
Okay, you'll like this one.
Okay.
This will be the thing that I wanted to tell you.
Okay.
And I'm going to keep it brief because Vikram Gandhi was on my podcast. He was in the movie Kumare. Did you see that?
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
I'm sure I've seen people tweeting at both of us that you should see it.
I got mad about it. I haven't seen it yet, but I got really mad about what he was doing. And
we can talk about that.
Be insanely unethical and just kind of like obvious. But go ahead. I should watch.
You should watch it.
I should watch it because I'm making the most idiotic judgment of all time. So that anyone ever could make, because I haven't seen the movie.
I don't think I would enjoy a movie that was just purely manipulative or mean-spirited.
Right.
So I think you might be.
I'm being a dum-dum. Sorry, Gandhi.
Nah. Both Gandhis?
Yeah.
There's many
I apologize to all the Gandhis.
Yeah, yeah. This is the thing I was going to tell you. That guy being like trying to – some of the better moments I've had, and I'm going to keep this brief because I did say this on my podcast already, but I wanted to tell you about it because I think you helped me get to this place. So I was – you know, I do TM, Transcendental Meditation, and the whole point of it was to like get to some other side shit, was basically to stop doing drugs. Not that I've ever done a lot of drugs. There's my puritanical instinct. I want to declare, everybody who knows me, you should know I don't do a lot of drugs. That's true, but who cares? I wanted to get to drug-like places without doing drugs. That was my intention from the beginning. It's like, fuck stress. I don't give a shit about stress. I just want to get to the other side. Let's Jim Morrison this. And I'm happy to say that it started to work. So the reason, what made me think of it was the guy that's like, I don't think about those trippy, philosophical, deep, I'm on a planet, what the fuck, look at the moon, holy shit. I'm here, I'm in this room. So there, you can go the other way and embrace the fact that I'm in this body. Like that, I'm in this room, I'm in this body, I'm in this head, I'm in this spirit, if you want to keep going in and in, instead of going out and out. And that was one of the most, it was the most transcendent moment of my life, and it was basic meditation. The reason I want to talk about it is for two reasons. One, because I think you'll think it's interesting, and two, because it's actually pretty practical. I did study transcendental meditation. A lot of people know that costs about $1,500. So a lot of people would be like, fuck that shit. So the great thing about it was that people can do something similar. All it was, and I got to be honest about this, and I think people often leave this shit out. Some days you're just feeling it. Some days you just feel more present. You might be more rested. For some reason, you're just more connected. I'm talking about going down that hill and opening up my arms just because today is a more beautiful day. So if you try this and it doesn't work, believe me, I try it all the time and it doesn't work. But this day it worked. I had enough rest. I didn't have much to do that day. And I had like a good hour that I didn't have to do anything. And I just sat on my bed and instead of just doing my mantra, I was saying to myself, it was more of a Buddhist philosophy. Instead of trying to transcend and get away, I was more just listening very intently to everything that was happening. I was just telling myself, if there was a mantra, I was just saying, be right here, be right here, be right here. Now, here's the thing that I'll be quick, just in case people have heard it before. I told you when I did this show last time that when I'm in my dreams and I'm lucid dreaming, I have this beautiful epiphany that I'm like, oh, so I'm Dream Pete. And I go, I'm inside Pete right now. My universe is being made by Pete.
Yeah.
So I have this idea of the creator, which is me. And I go, he's creating, his brain is creating this world. So if we were dreaming right now, I'd be like, Pete made this table. I'm inside of him. And also I know that if I get too excited, if I fly around or something, Pete, capital P Pete, God, dream God Pete, his heart rate is going to accelerate. So I'm aware of a heart and a circulatory system of the thing that's creating my world.
Yeah.
I go, I can't run around and grab boobies or look up skirts or fly because that'll make my creator's heart rate increase and he'll wake up. and that'll end all of this. So instead what I do is I breathe, I take a moment, and I calm the dreamer. So that's something that I have on my on a post-it note on my door that says, calm your dreamer. So it's the idea of going in the dream. I go, I breathe in and I breathe out. And I'm actually telling my body, my host body, to also breathe in and breathe out and relax and don't wake up and let me stay in here. I'm going to play in here for a moment. So please relax and stay asleep. Because when you wake up, I stop to exist. Jesus. So calm down. Okay, right? This is wild. That's part A. And that works. So if we were in a dream right now, you know how dreams are. The perimeter of this might be foggy. Your face might be warping around. You might not look like you. There might not be as much color, that sort of thing. And when I do that, when I calm the dreaming guy and I breathe in and breathe out, I can kind of see him breathe in and breathe out. Like the room expands and contracts a little bit. And when he calms down, dreaming Pete, I mean host Pete, calms down, everything wakes up. So like this, the tablecloth on this table has a pattern to it. That might show up. Whereas before it was just blue. Now the pattern comes in.
Yeah.
One time I did it, I was looking at a cityscape and I calmed him down. And I saw a highway that I couldn't see before. And I could see headlights on the highway. Just dozens and dozens of cars, way more than I could ever imagine.
Yeah.
Like if I burdened myself to sit and close my eyes and try to picture a city, just a beautiful, infinite, intricate, colorful, three-dimensional, amazing city that just takes your breath away. And I see it because he calms down and that allows the world to come in.
Yep.
That's part A. Here's part B, and this is where it gets really Duncan Trussell trippy, family hour.
Please.
So I'm meditating and I'm just telling myself to be right here. And then I'm thinking about the idea of when I calm myself in my dreams, the world becomes more vivid. I told you that colors show up, cars show up, patterns show up. And then I had this thought that doesn't quite make sense when I say it. It's one of those thoughts, but made perfect sense when I was in the middle of this kind of trance. I thought, can I calm what's dreaming me?
Yeah.
You get that?
Cool.
Isn't that trippy?
Yeah.
So I was like, whatever you want to call it, God, creator, my own essence, can I calm it down? Mm. Can I put the needle on the record? Can I set it, the timer to zero and just be right here? And I did the same thing where I just breathe in and like, and breathe out. And I did that. And my eyes are closed. And I'm doing it. I'm like, calm your dreamer. Try and have a waking appreciation for the world as if you were dreaming. This is what you helped me realize. Try and see this world as a simulation. If I told you that you were not in your house, we're not in California, we're in Boston, in my parents' house, and I put a helmet on you, and it was making you think you're in this house, you'd be fascinated with everything. How amazingly intricate the simulation was. So I was like, can I do that here? Can I do that? Can I be like a dreamer while I'm awake? So I tried it, and I'm just closing my eyes and breathing, and I'm breathing, and then I was done. I don't time myself. I just felt done, and I opened my eyes, and the room looked. I'd like to say this before I tell you how the room looked. I had no intention. This wasn't a do A to get B.
Yeah.
This was a do A just to do A, and then B showed up.
Yeah.
And I opened my eyes, and the room was the most vivid. It's my bedroom. I've seen it a billion times. But my sheets on the bed looked like a mountain range. All the folds and the wrinkles. Every fabric felt amazing. It was like I was holding my breath. I wasn't. I was actually breathing quite deeply. But it felt like that urgency of blood rushing to your head and color rushing to your eyes and light. It was. You can kind of get it in this room a little bit. Even just talking about it can wake up the reality. Just discussing it right now, I can kind of feel it a little bit. But I walked around like an alien. And that's like another Duncan Trussell thing where I was like, I'm in this meat spaceship.
Yeah.
And maybe I was a spirit that elected to come to this planet. That's one of my favorite little fantasies that I entertain. And for once I bought the ticket to the show, and the show was Pete walks around his bedroom and then he opens the door and he sees that there's five doors in his hallway and he laughs. And he gets in the bathroom and the tile is colder than the wood and that makes him laugh and smile. And he sees light coming in and you kind of like, this sounds like a trip, doesn't it? It sounds like mushrooms. I looked at light and I said, there's vitamin D in this light. My skin gets information from this light. Everything is here because of this light. It doesn't quite make sense talking about it.
Makes sense to me, man.
But I walked around and I never wanted to leave that space. And ever since I got there, you can get there back there a little bit because you were there. And I can certainly get back there from meditating.
Here's a crazy idea.
And it wasn't even that hard to do.
Here's an idea. What if what we've done here, what if we there actually is a heaven? And we fucking took the brown acid.
What do you mean?
Human neurology. We're God on brown, you know, and
what is brown acid? Oh, the bad acid?
Don't eat the brown acid. Don't go in the human bodies. You're in heaven. If you go in the human bodies, it can get really fucked up.
Yeah.
Don't go in the human.
But we're the weird dissenters that were like, fuck you. Nobody tells me what to do.
Get out of here, man. I'm partying. So we fucking pop these human neurologies, and now we're having these like insane shit trips. Like when people eat Datura or what are called delirients. And now we've like created this leaf. We just projected shit all over heaven. So we've just like basically like put on helmets smeared with diarrhea and we're looking into heaven through a lens covered in our own excrement.
Yes.
So when you what you're talking about is like through meditation, you're kind of like cleansing that lens for a second, and suddenly you're looking out and all these things that used to seem so mundane,
so silly,
boring,
so stupid, boring,
empty,
dull, gray.
All of a sudden every little fucking particle,
yeah,
every little minutia of this world that we're in is fully satisfying, fully gratifying, and is enough.
Right.
We don't need anything else.
Right.
We don't need anything. We don't need money. We don't need a Roomba.
Right.
We just need this moment,
right,
and we're fulfilled.
Right.
That's insane. And a lot of people can't accept that idea. You know why? Because it fucking mouth fucks capitalism. It fucks capitalism up. It really does.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's like, how the fuck are you going to sell somebody a goddamn Mitsubishi,
right,
if they're completely in love with their pillowcase?
Right. Or if they know they're okay already.
Yeah. It's tough.
Right.
It's tough.
Right.
It's a real tough sell.
Yeah.
So it's almost as though, if you want to get back to what we were talking about in the beginning, the idea of conspiracies, it's almost as though there is a financial, motivation to keep people. Too many people from sitting there and being like, I have everything I need right now.
Right.
Because goddamn, that doesn't work.
Right.
It really doesn't work.
Right. It doesn't work to give somebody the perfect thing. We need to give them an iPhone and the knowledge that there's going to be another iPhone.
You know what's cool about you, Pete, which is that I really like? Because, you know, I was saying, like, you run into all these fucking people and they, like, they're having success and they're, like, they just seem unhappy. You don't seem like that. And you're having some of the most, you're having like the big.
Is this your question?
This is my question. You're having like the big, and I feel weird. Like it's, well, you have to end soon. I feel weird ending it on such a mundane topic after you really did just blow my mind with like calming the dreamer.
Isn't
like,
that great?
Don't wake up the
sleeping. Dude, calm the dreamer.
Don't wake the sleeping God.
Something's
you
dreaming you.
Yeah, you are a sleeping God. Don't wake it up. But it's interesting because by calming the dreamer, you wake the dreamer, I guess. But the
question. Yeah,
here's my question.
I got the big ice cream sundae. That's what happened.
So you have you're going to be the host of your own show?
Yes.
What is this show?
You know, it's funny, man. You, Duncan Trussell, were like the only person for some reason. I'm not a superstitious person, but you walk a fine line between bragging about something. You know, when you get good news and you're like, well, I probably shouldn't tell old Billy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? By the way, Timothy Leary.
You mean
I think,
you shouldn't tell people about your success because it drives
some people.
They want to fucking strangle you.
Right. You got to keep away from that. And honestly, I'm not aware of that. I know I must have haters and there's got to be some jealousy.
Sure.
But I'm blissfully unaware. Also, by the way, when I was talking about that calming the dreamer thing, I think it was Timothy Leary when he was dying said that when he was in the hospital, he used to see like a bug crawling across the floor and it would make him cry. It felt a little bit like that. I bet he was like 100 times calming his dreamer, like waking up to the beauty of an ant crawling around, which sounds so hippie, but fuck it, man.
Yeah, fuck it.
Fuck everybody.
Yeah.
if you're in the way,
that's where
go fuck yourself.
The whole beautiful thing.
Fuck everybody.
Everything's beautiful. Fuck them.
I mean, I don't need permission to go to recess. If I want to talk about light being beautiful.
Sure. And then talk about crucifying your enemies on their own spinal columns. You're allowed to do that. I don't know what I just said.
Yeah. No, I loved it.
So, So,
yes, I'm hosting the show. The dream of dreams literally came true for me, being Conan O'Brien has been a personal hero of mine for as long as I can remember, really, when I was in comedy.
Yeah.
And I did a show a number of times. Two is the number. That is a number of times. And then I met with him and I met with his producer, and they were talking about trying to find somebody to that had a similar sensibility that would be in that same tone, a natural progression. So you watch Conan for an hour. Who are you going to watch for half an hour after? Because one of the reasons Conan went to TBS was so that he could kind of have more of a presence than just his show.
Yeah.
He wanted to make other shows. So he's making Dion Cole's show, The Black Box, and he's making my show, which we think we're just going to call The Pete Holmes Show, to be honest.
And it's like a Conan O'Brien, you're going to be at a desk.
There's going to be, yeah, great question. I often get the desk question. I'm open to anything. It's an adventure. It's not a it's not a stencil. It's not a formula necessarily that we're going to follow. I'd like to walk the line enough so people will identify it as a late night talk show.
Is it once a week?
It's four nights a week.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
Half hour, four nights a week.
Holy fuck.
I know.
So you got to do monologues and stuff?
Well, you see, it's funny.
Can you do something for me?
Sure.
Introduce your show. Studio audience here. Imagine it's not yeah. me. You're looking at a studio audience. You're standing on that sweet, polished floor. The
yeah.
Pete Holmes Show. Yeah. You know how the floors are always shiny?
It'll be a shiny floor.
You're standing on the floor. You're wearing these clothes. That I don't even know what the
yeah.
fucking clothes
yeah.
are.
Yeah, like. I'll show you the pilot. You can see this.
So you're standing here. Let's hear the... I want to hear what the intro sounds like.
What I say?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Pete Holmes Show. And then they all cheer. And I go, we're really doing it. This is a complete dream come true.
Tonight
our guest is Duncan Trussell's going to pop by.
Yay! Who is that asshole? I'm so disappointed. I drove up from Orange.
I couldn't get tickets to Conan.
Fucking bad night. This idiot Duncan.
Yeah, no, they'll love it. Well, it's actually funny. One of the ideas is to have more friends on the show. Because it is. It's midnight. It's going to be like a clubhouse feel. It's going to be like a playhouse feel. We're not a big dog in the fight. You know what I mean? So I'd like it to have... If I can maintain some of the tone of podcasts like this and podcasts like my own, some of the
hard.
I know it's very hard, and we're not going to force it. But I'd like to find the television version of this novelty.
I think you'd almost have to do a separate record. Like you'd almost have to.
No,
like,
I know we can't have these conversations.
Well, yeah, but also like when you plop a comic down in front of a fucking audience,
it's different.
Because their instincts. Shift in
but
the
we garden. Already had segment idea. We almost did it for the pilot, which was like Pete and Duncan do X, Y, or Z. We just didn't do it because we were like, I don't know how trippy
Pete
we were.
Pete and Duncan
wanna...
do X to C.
But Pete and Duncan, what was the idea? It was something, I have different ideas for different segments, but certainly things with you where we go and we get our auras read.
Yes.
And not just to be silly, but like do some past life shit.
Really do it, or like go do TM or like...
It'll be funny. It'll certainly be funny. By virtue of being us, it'll be funny.
It'll be funny. And if it's not funny,
you don't air it.
You don't
yeah,
air
exactly.
It.
Yeah. Or you put it online.
Yeah.
But the idea is we won't necessarily be doing a monologue in... I call it the public address, which is just meaning I'm going to come out and talk directly to the audience in the camera doing something that closely resembles my stand-up. That'll be act one. Act two will be sketches, kind of like the Batman stuff that we've done and like the Doctor videos that we've done with Front Page Films.
Cool.
That'll be all throughout act two, and also some like tape stuff with celebrities. Like Joel McHale did the pilot, Wayne Brady, like some really random... hilarious dudes were on there. Kyrie Irving, who's a basketball player who I didn't know. We did this amazing thing where I taught him how to talk trash. Just like, you know, field pieces where I'm playing myself, sketches where I'm playing other people, other characters. And then the third act, which my producer is pretty bent on always having a guest. I'm open to it being either way. We have a long show and there's more sketch, or we have a show where there's no sketch and there's two guests. I don't give a shit. Conan keeps telling me time and time again, he's like, get it on its feet. Then you'll know what the show
That's
is.
That's right.
Yeah.
I agree with Conan.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
I have no experience with anything.
When he talks, I'm just like, whatever
no,
you say.
No, but that is something I was thinking about that is like, I really hope that they, because I can remember a long time ago when the Conan show started.
Yeah.
And you watch it and it's like, he was rusty. Like
that's his big thing. He was like, he didn't want to do a pilot. He didn't want to do we're doing a 4 or 6 week run. I'm not sure. I think it'll be 4 maybe.
Yeah.
He was like, at the beginning, he was like, we're not doing a pitch. We're not doing a pilot. You put him on the air for a year because that's how long it
takes.
That's
what it should be.
And I have faith in TBS and I have faith in Conan that they're going to give us a shot, that they're going to let us.
But they're starting with 4 weeks.
Yes, which some people are like, well, that means you're fucked. And I'm like, I don't think so. I think we're going to be fine. The pilot was... one of the best experiences. I think it was the best experience.
When do you start taping?
We're going to start taping remotes and stuff and sketches in August, in a couple months.
Man, you should start putting up a show somewhere where you could just start practicing.
I did it last night. It's at Largo once a month.
See, you took my advice in reverse.
Where I'm going out and doing like newer stand-up, and then I have stand-ups, and then we do a panel afterwards, and then we have a musical guest. It's very similar. So if you want to come, it's called Pete Holmes Living at Largo. A sleeve tattoo?
Yeah.
Just really throw a curveball at TBS?
Shave your head and get a sleeve tattoo.
It's weird to say that because, like, doing this show, because there's no way anyone could, like, they don't know everything that I'm about. There's no way they could be. So, like, when we're doing this show and we're talking about, like, mushrooms, or I know they don't care. Like, I'm going to be who I am, and that's who they're invested in. But it is weird that you have a mild awareness where you're like, I couldn't get a sleeve tattoo. Not that I want a sleeve tattoo, or I couldn't say this, or I kind of have to be a little bit more careful.
Well, when the fuck are you ever going to get a sleeve tattoo?
Or what do I have to say that I have to be careful about? That's what I'm realizing. But I'll tell you this, show got picked up, and then I tweeted that it got picked up, and then I was like, what is my next tweet going to be? Because all my tweets online, which is Pete Holmes with an S now, by the way, not a Z.
What do you mean?
I got Pete Holmes instead of Pete Holmes with a Z.
What, who the fuck am I following?
No, it swapped automatically. You didn't have to change it.
Oh, it did.
But if you tweet at me, you have to do it with Pete Holmes with an S.
And also, I kind of cut you off when you're talking about your Largo show. When is the Largo show?
It's once a month. It's called Pete Holmes Living at Largo. You can go to largo-la.com to get tickets to that.
Okay, cool.
Those are great. John C. Reilly did the first one. We've had some amazing. Sarah Watkins, this amazing musician that I was listening to, and it was making me cry on the ride over. Was amazing, like bluegrass.
You should get Father John Misty on there. Do you know who that is?
I have him, yeah. Oh, to do the show, yeah. I'd love to get him. I'd love to get him.
Lou Barlow.
Okay. I should email these to the guy because I don't book the music guest, but I'd love both of those people. But I remember after the show got picked up, so the first tweet was like, hey, the show got picked up. Oh, my God. Like 500 favorites and all this sort of stuff. And then you're like, my next tweet was going to be something like stupid. Like, even when I'm single, I'm only partially ready to mingle. And I remember looking at that tweet and I was like, can I tweet this? Can I send this? Or are people going to be like, this is the guy they're giving a show?
Yes.
And that's why I was like, fuck that.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Thank God.
Send.
Yeah, you know, man, that's the thing. You're going to have to, like, actively beat back the calcification of the persona that you're creating on air.
Well, that's why it's the Beatles, man. It's Radiohead. I'm sorry to put myself with those greats, but it's like constantly never letting people nail you down completely.
Yeah.
And be like, you can't say I'm now talk show host Pete Holmes. I'm not going to be homogenized or pasteurized. I'm going to keep being the guy that I'm trying to be all the time. It's not just the act. It's every day. It's not just podcasts. I'm striving to evolve and be real and be more real and be funnier and be more funny. You know what I mean? So just
cut to 2 years later. You pass me on the street. I'm homeless. I'm Pete, you got it.
Hey, Pete.
Who the fuck was that? I don't know. Some bum.
You're a vampire now, man.
Oh, God damn.
I did you on my podcast.
I gotta
people
change
that.
My fucking voice, man. I gotta go to a speech
no,
therapist.
That is not. You think I came here to make you feel worse
no,
about yourself?
I'm just kidding. I like my. I'm here I have to, impression. I like that people are doing impressions of me.
Yeah.
Immensely flattering.
Sure.
Pete.
Can I look at my list and see if there was anything I really wanted to tell you? Presence, meditation, Scientology, simulation, pyramid. I bought a meditation pyramid. It's pretty cool.
What the fuck is that?
I just sometimes meditate underneath a pyramid. Here's the cool thing. I got it on...
Wait. What?
I got it on Amazon. Well, you know I love astral projection.
What size is it?
It's like this big. What is that? 32 inches
you
each
hang
time.
It?
I hang it from the light above my bed and sometimes meditate underneath it.
Do you go completely under it like a tent or just...
No. It's just bars. It's just bars of metal. So you can see through it. In fact, spiders love making webs in it.
You guys see why I love Pete Holmes, don't you? This is like...
I'm not here to fuck around.
After...
People say meditating under a pyramid makes it better. I'm like, I have $30. I can get a pyramid. I don't give a shit. It's the one embarrassing thing in my place. I have to take it down when guests come over. I'm like, that would be stupid if I had a pyramid. And then the people, it's like Dr. Seuss, those who mind don't matter and those who matter don't mind. Some people are like, who cares? Get a pyramid. The reason I got it was because Robert Monroe, the kind of grandfather of astral projection, in his second book, Fire Journeys, it's right in the beginning. So he's writing more about how he was leaving his body voluntarily. And this will be brief just in case people don't give a shit about this. Somebody, he went back to his old house and he was like, this is where it first started happening. And if you remember, Robert Moreau started leaving his body without giving the order. So he'd just be sleeping and he'd wake up floating above his body and he'd be like, holy shit, I think I'm dying. And then he realized slowly over time that he could control it, and he went on these incredible right. journeys, which he wrote in a book called Journeys Out of the Body, which I highly recommend. Very interesting book. Second book is called Far Journeys, and he takes a friend back to his old house where he started leaving his body unintentionally without giving any sort of order. And the guy was like, look, your bedroom where you were sleeping and having these experiences, the roof is a perfect pyramid. It has the same dimensions as the Pyramid of Giza, and it's even covered in copper, which before the looters came into Cairo or wherever those pyramids are, they were capped with copper. So some sort of conduit metal, of like a spiritual metal or whatever. So he was like, okay, maybe it's pyramid power, which is what they called it, or maybe it's not. He didn't even buy into it, which even makes him even more badass. Because if it were me, I'd be like, that's obviously it. Yeah. We got to get pyramids. But I was like, that's it, man. I haven't even been trying to do that sort of thing because it still kind of terrifies me. But I was like, I'll sleep under one. After a while, the first night I went to bed under it and it freaked me out. I had to take it down. Second night I fell asleep.
What happened the first night?
Nothing happened, but I was just like, is this a portal? Am I letting something in? I'm afraid. I'm single. I sleep alone, scared. Now I sleep under it every night and it doesn't bother me. It doesn't make my dreams any more intense. But keep in mind, I'm the guy who lets his chiropractor convince him that he's weaker or stronger.
Sure.
I do feel like I'm like, oh, I like meditating under the bed. Let me just say that. I'm not going to say it's more effective or less effective.
You like it.
There's something deliberate. It's like a church. You're like, I'm going under the pyramid to meditate.
Look, man, I love it. You know what I like when I meditate? I like to light candles.
Yeah, there you go.
I like to burn incense.
Little ceremony.
I like to create a space.
And I'm under the pyramid.
And
that's...
you have a pyramid. And I think that there's... I think you should do that. I think that's very important.
Who cares? I have no dependents, and I have $30 that I can throw away on a pyramid. And then, you know, if I'm hanging out with a girl or something, the pyramid comes down.
See? Pete?
I shouldn't. Not always. In fact.
Leave the pyramid up.
You're fucking right.
Leave that fucking thing up.
You know why? Because it's recess.
And also they'll love it.
I know. That's actually the truth, is like, love me, love my pyramid, or love me, love the fact that I'm the kind of guy who, like you, Duncan, I learned this from you. I've learned a lot from you.
Jeez, thanks.
It's completely true. I told you like saved my spiritual life a big way. I call you brother not lightly. Not lightly.
Well,
you're very
you,
important.
Please.
And I told you you're the most requested return guest on the show,
which we'll
have to do. Although I'm going to tweet this episode like it was an episode of my show.
Might as well.
I mean, like, I'm not going to release it, but I'm just going to, like, get people to listen to it.
Thank you.
I love it so much. I love talking to you so much. But that sort of thing where it's like we can throw ropes into the dark abyss, the weird places, and have the power to come back. And that's what keeps us from being lunatics. We can recreate in the crazy parts of the mind.
Yes.
It's our power to return that keeps us able to eat gluten-free cookies and go to Starbucks without being like, it's an illusion, we're on a planet.
Yeah. So, well, we can play all the different roles. You know?
That's what I'm saying.
That's the idea. We can have our own show, be friends with Conan O'Brien, and God damn it, we can meditate under a pyramid.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
As you said, we're here. We're here for a finite time. We're in a meat spaceship.
Yes.
And we came to this planet. We came to this dimension. We only have a certain amount of time. So we're in a decaying meat spaceship. We're all aware that it goes away.
Candle's burning.
Right. The candle's burning, which is, by the way, one of the reasons why I think we elect to come here. Like, you're looking at a pamphlet. We're in some eternal realm. And you're like, do you want to go to Earth? Apparently, the thought that we all die makes cake taste better.
Also, yeah.
And they're like, I want to taste better cake.
By the way, if I'm sitting at a video arcade in the distant future where there's super high-tech neurological interfaces that allow me to experience entire lifetimes and moments.
Yeah.
And one of the games is like, you don't come out of the game. And the other game is like, there's a natural shutoff. You'll come out of the game.
Yes.
Don't worry.
I picked
the one I can come out of, not the one that I'm stuck in forever. No one's going to do that game. You got to have an escape hatch in the fuck. It's like death is an alarm, you know?
Yeah.
It's a thing that just like, it's time to like play more games later on down the road.
Fucking A, man. And you tried to wrap this up 20 minutes ago.
Pete, I love you. Thank you so much for doing this. Guys, you know Pete Holmes has an amazing podcast called You Made It Weird.
Yeah.
That's on iTunes. Pete, what's your website?
PeteHolmes.com.
PeteHolmes.com.
PeteHolmes on Twitter.
Pete Holmes is going to be hanging out in your living room soon, which is very exciting. Thanks for being on the show, man.
My sincere pleasure, man.
Hare Krishna. That was Pete Holmes, everybody. Thanks for listening to that episode. Guys, get out there, enjoy the summer with some delicious genetically modified food. And now please enjoy this non-genetically modified song. It's called I'm the Urban Spaceman, and it's by the Bonzo Dog Band, and it was recommended to us by our new resident DJ, famous Los Angeles DJ, Nina Tarr. You can check her out at ninatarr.com. That's Tarr with two R's. Here it is. I'm the Urban Spaceman from the Bonzo Dog Band and their album, Tadpoles, available on iTunes. Buy it. I love you. See you guys. Bye.
Listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, one of the many podcasts from Feral Audio. Go to feralaudio.com and check out the amazing programming there. Go adopt a dog.